I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The importance of sleep. Cambridge neuroscientist Dr. Mick Hastings from the MRC Laboratory of Molecular Biology and Dr. Ak Reddy from the Institute of Metabolic Sciences, Cambridge University, spoke at the annual Cambridge Neuroscience Seminar about their work on sleep. They explained their research on the importance of sleep for learning and memory, preventing cancer, the health of your heart, mopping up toxic waste in your body, winning that Olympic gold medal, and why you shouldn't have that midnight kebab. I'm Dr. Hannah Critchlow, and I went along to the seminar to discuss their work with them. Firstly, starting with Mick Hastings, talking about his research.
Okay, well, I'm interested in the circadian body clock, which is the thing that makes us wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night. Especially interested in a small part of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which actually is our body's principal circadian clockwork. Found in a part of the brain called the hypothalamus, which is just above the roof of your mouth, actually, if you were looking to do it anatomically. We're interested in the genes that code for the components of the body clock. We're interested in how those genes are activated, the types of proteins that they produce, and it's these proteins which take part in what's called a feedback loop, which is in fact the actual process that enables the clock cells to define for themselves an approximately 24-hour cycle.
And what kind of methods do you use to investigate this cycle and how it's regulated?
We use primarily genetically modified mice. These are mice which carry particular genes which cause the brain cells in those mice to become bioluminescent at certain parts of their circadian cycle. And we can record the actual clockwork as it goes through its paces, producing proteins in the day, breaking the proteins down at night, and then producing proteins again on the following day.
And are there people or even mice that have impaired circadian rhythms?
The most obvious for many people's experience is jet lag, where you move between time zones. But a far more insidious and, from my viewpoint, more important issue for public health is rotational shift work. People who spend their working life on rotational shift works are forever messing up their circadian body clock, and we see that they have a significantly increased susceptibility to metabolic disease and cancer, what have you. So keeping a healthy clockwork going is very important for the quality of our health.
There's also been in the press recently talking about Margaret Thatcher, who had a very small amount of sleep every day. I think it was 4 or 5 hours that she used to survive on, and she's sadly suffering from Alzheimer's dementia at the moment. Could you comment on Alzheimer and cognition and the role of sleep for cognition?
That's a really interesting question, because, you know, what's sleep for? Well, sleep is for the brain to make sense of everything that happened to it during the day when the person was awake, and to store down memories, to modify existing memories, and fundamentally to allow the brain to change its biochemistry. And that change in biochemistry is what memory is. So if people have disrupted sleep-wake patterns, then, of course, their memory systems are going to be less effective, and they'll be able to clearly learn things less well. Note there for teenagers at school and students, and also generally function less effectively in the social world. Now, you raised specifically the question about Alzheimer's dementia. One critically important feature about these neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's is that the patients suffering, so even in the early stages of the disease, have disturbed sleep-wake cycles. We don't know why that is. There's several reasons possibly why it may be, but the observation is that sleep-wake cycles are disturbed, and it's that which is the major driver, unfortunately, for people with such a condition to be put into nursing care, to leave their home. It's not necessarily because they're cognitively impaired, because they're demented, it's because it's just almost impossible for a family setting to look after a person who loses their 24-hour normal sleep-wake cycle.
Thank you. And do you know whether there's a direct link between sleep and learning and memory? Can you talk more about that, provide some more details?
When sleep happens, the actual biochemical processes, for example, in a part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is necessary for laying down memories, are very different from the waking state. And it's almost as if, because we live our lives on a regular 24-hour cycle, the clocks in the brain actually make it possible for genes to be expressed, for enzymes to be active in the hippocampus when we expect to be asleep, which actually consolidate our memory. Whereas when we're awake, we're not looking to consolidate memory, we're looking to acquire new information about the world. And at that stage of the cycle, the clocks in the brain make sure that we're producing the enzymes and the neurotransmitters that are necessary actually to engage with the world and take on sensory information. So it's two completely different states of brain function, and each is the complement to the other.
And so obviously people who are doing shift work and having altered sleep patterns, their cognition, their memory may be affected as a result.
Most definitely. Everyone's had a bad night, or many people, of course, have had to work through the night, and they know how it feels the morning after. There's elements of sleep loss, a sleep debtor, so it's called, but also circadian disruption underlying that. And the really important, the debilitating condition is rotational shift work, where these insults to the brain, to the cognitive system, are being applied on a regular basis, unrelenting in fact, and the body clock can never actually catch up with the new demands that are being made on it. And in those circumstances, for sure, there will be cognitive impairment.
We're now going to move over to Ak Reddy, who's going to describe some of the findings that he's going to be presenting at today's Cambridge Neuroscience Seminar.
So in a similar way to what Mick was describing in terms of partitioning sleep and wake and other processes that happen on a 24-hour basis, our work's really started trying to look at the basis for why circadian rhythms actually evolved in the first place. And one of the reasons why we think that they evolved is to do just that, to partition things that should happen in the day from things that should happen in the night. And a classic example that's used in the circadian world is partitioning the effect of light on DNA, for example. So you don't want to synthesize and replicate your DNA when there's lots of light around, because it might come in contact with UV radiation and therefore be more susceptible to mutation. So you do most of that at night time. And there's good evidence for that in even rapidly dividing organisms like bacteria, that they separate out these two processes into different parts of the day. In humans, you have similar functional division of processes, like you make glucose in the daytime predominantly, and you break it down when you need it more at a different time of day. And so if you look at multiple different organisms, you can see these same kind of phenomena arising, that you partition things at different times of day. And until now, we hadn't really been able to look at why that might be the case in multiple different species. And that's really kind of what we've been looking at more recently. And we've really focused on a protein called peroxyrhodopsin, which is involved in metabolizing hydrogen peroxide, which is a kind of nasty substance that we produce in our bodies. And in fact, most organisms on the planet produces a byproduct of making energy, essentially, because you have to use oxygen to make energy. And as a byproduct, you naturally produce this reactive oxygen species called hydrogen peroxide. And we're really trying to figure out why and how that has kind of intermingled into the clockwork mechanism in multiple different species. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today.
And what kind of technique do you use in order to study this hydrogen peroxide mopping up almost by the body and how it's controlled by the circadian rhythm?
Well, really, we've focused on a very old and simple technique, which is using Western blots. So this is literally just looking at the changes in a protein, its level, or in this case, actually a modification of the protein over time. And it's a really simple, basic type of assay. At the moment, we're developing new techniques to actually look at this in real living cells using fluorescence and bioluminescence. But we haven't yet got enough data to show that to the public at the moment. But we're working essentially with tried and tested tools.
And people may be also interested to hear that even your blood cells have their own circadian rhythm. They have their own 24-hour clock within a cell that hasn't even got a nucleus. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit about the paper that I believe you published? Mm-hmm. In the last 12 months on this?
Yes, I mean, it wasn't really that we went out looking for rhythms in red blood cells. It was really to answer a specific question. We wanted to know, because people didn't really believe that you could have rhythms without gene expression going up and down over the 24-hour cycle in complex organisms like humans. It had been shown in simple things like bacteria, but never in nucleated organisms like us. And so it was really just to see whether it was possible, and the red cell was an ideal mechanism in which to do that. In fact, probably the only cell type you could use for that type of experiment. So it's really a tool rather than a kind of You know, this is really important in biology, but it obviously has consequences for things like performance in athletics and things like that, which we know do actually have a circadian basis. So, you know, elite athletes will go to a certain place in the world and acclimatise there to avoid the things that jet lag causes when you move between time zones, to make sure that you're on peak performance for your particular race or whatever you're doing.
And so the important messages that are coming across is that sleep is incredibly important for us in terms of a number of different functions for our body. It's regulated by this master clock in the brain, and this directs the body clocks of your body. The altered sleep-wake pattern that can be caused by rotational shift work and also even Alzheimer's can affect our cognition, so our learning and memory. And it can also affect other aspects of body physiology. So, for example, affecting how we mop up toxic wastes and also DNA replication and performance even in sports. Are there any other key things that could be affected if our body clocks are mistimed?
You've mentioned cancer, things like that. Recent studies have shown that skin can be susceptible to light. It's kind of an obvious thing. Arrhythmias in the heart, that's been shown recently in a paper. And of course, there's a growing literature about metabolism itself. So actually having a kind of resonance with the outside world and making sure that you're eating at the right time of day is very important. So if you just simply miss time when you eat your meals, it can lead to you basically putting on more weight than you should do, for example. So this old adage of people saying that you should eat breakfast like a king and dinner like a pauper is probably actually correct. You should try and eat lots of your food in the daytime, at least if you're a human, and the reverse if you're a rodent, to make sure that you're actually in tune with the outside world and you're maximising your fuel expenditure.
And that's a great reason as to why, despite all the attractiveness of it, one should not have a doner kebab at midnight. Because the problem is all the fat, all the triglycerides, all the nasty things that are in that tasty kebab, your liver, because your body clock works to a different time, isn't actually prepared to deal with them. And it's that type of thing that poorly controlled absorbance and mobilisation of fats actually leads to your arteries being clogged up. So best to avoid the midnight kebab.
Thank you, Mick Hastings from the MRC Laboratory of Molecular Biology, Cambridge, speaking about the master clock in the brain, and Ak Reddy from the Institute of Metabolic Sciences, University of Cambridge, talking about the clocks of your body, both presenting their research at the Cambridge Neuroscience Seminar.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.